Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, wrapping up another week, the second week of October 2016. It is the 14th day of October 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the rollicking, madcap, zany, merry, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn Chat Room. Just run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Chat Room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in where you will be joyfully met and greeted by Anatole, Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgistan, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage field navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. And it is Friday on the front porch, which means that we will, in about an hour's time, be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and seeing what's on folks' minds. Let's see, do we get Billable Rick this evening, or is he at Geezer Palooza? I'm not sure. I imagine, or was that last week? If it's this week, the ovation for Nobel laureate Bob Dylan should be pretty impressive. Yep. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. I've been mentioning it toward the end of the program in the credits, but I should probably give it a little higher visibility this time through, being as how this is sort of the last chance. If you're anywhere near Charleston, West Virginia, on Monday, about noon-ish, join a gathering that Coal River Mountain Watch has called together for the purpose of protesting and protecting, over 4,000 acres worth of mountaintop removal permits that the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection has granted for Coal River Mountain, one of the last reasonably extant mountain complexes in southern West Virginia, and to protect the community and all the things that go into creating community. That's noon, Charleston, over in Kanawha City, at the headquarters of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. Because, you know, what's funny, isn't it? All the environmental groups and whatnot who say, coal is dead. There ain't no more coal. Coal industry's dead. We're moving forward into a clean, green energy future. Boom. And another blast goes off, and another cloud of toxic dust boils down onto an Appalachian community. Boom. And another 10 or so cruise missiles worth of explosives go off. So join us, really. It's worth the trip. It's worth adding your voice to the voices that will be raised in opposition to the further destruction of Appalachia. And, of course, just, you know, put West Virginia WVDEP in your browser on your phone, and I'm sure your GPS will lead you right to it. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about people who will be impacted by that. We'll be talking about the AIC Act, the necessity to do something about the ongoing poisoning of Appalachia. Oh, by the way, at 5 minutes past the hour, a reminder, this is a listener-supported program. Fundraising was kind of thin last night. We don't have any subscribers for this date, the 14th of the month. We'd love to have a subscriber for the 14th of the month, and this would be a great time to jump in. Just click that little box there under the Contribute tab that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. Because we pulled up a mite short last night, the fundraising goal for the evening is $355. And that will finish the week at, you know, that'll finish out the fundraising goal for the week, and that way we won't have any kind of a hole to crawl out of come Moran Monday, the 17th of October. Also, a gentle reminder, the Monday will be a week exactly from the 11th internet-only manifestation of the horn. Our 11th anniversary being on the internet only comes along a week from Monday. Steve said, when is it again, the Coal River Mountain Watch, the Coal River Mountain protest? That's Monday at noon. And, no, I plan on being on the air Monday evening. I should be able to, you know, we'll be done in a couple of hours, and this ain't Woodstock. And I'll pack up all the PA gear and the whatnot and so forth and toddle back up the mountain. So, yeah, we'll have more in Monday. Don't you worry. Yeah. But we do need to raise $355 this evening. And that's one at $355 or 10 at $35.50 or 35 and a half people at $10. I always feel bad about shaking down that half a person because you never know which half they are. But Yeah, you get the idea. One at 355, so that means two at 177.50. And I'm not going to do any ciphering beyond that because it'll make my little head hurt. But it is important that we stay out of the hole, especially here as we cross the, during the weekend, we cross the halfway mark in October. Because, dear God, there's still a bunch more bills to pay. Okay, so there's that. If you prefer not to use the Contribute tab, you can always use, with PayPal, you can just use bobkincaid@gmail.com and click sending money to friends and family and thereby not be saddled with the transfer fees. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801, for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, because, well, I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. Okay, so that pretty much takes care of the fundraising, I hope. It would be nice if it just went boom, and it was there, and I didn't have to say another godforsaken word about it, because I hate doing that. Note coming in from Steve in New York. I've come to a conclusion. Given there are more than two people, can't count Jill voting for herself, though I wonder if she will, know her own polling place, voting for her, I'm thinking you should be telling people how to vote. Yeah, by the way, $15 challenge. So that'll get us started. And that will take us down to $325 to go on the evening if someone will match the $15 challenge that Steve has just put on the table. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. The only reason I'm voting for Hillary Clinton is because, A, I said I was going to do so when I said if Bernie doesn't win the nomination, I'll vote for Hillary Clinton. And granted, I'm not a big fan. But still, she beats the dickens out of the alternative, and there is only one alternative, and the alternative's name is Donald Trump. It's not named Jill Stein. It's not named Gary Johnson. So, you know, I'm only voting for Hillary because I'm keeping my word. I said when Bernie announced his candidacy that, along with Bernie, who said the same thing, that if he did not win the primary, that he would vote for Hillary. And me, I'm standing with Bernie. I've never stopped standing with Bernie. I'm taking Bernie's advice because Bernie gives a lot better advice than, you know, Jill Stein. City Council member Jill Stein. Oy. So I'll probably get emails saying, well, you know. But, no, I mean, Steve says I should tell people how to vote. But I'm voting for just as a matter of keeping my word. And, you know, also because I want to maintain the status quo such as it is. Because most people in this country only get glimpses of chaos and horror. Mostly we hold it back. We hold the really huge flood tides of it back. And we just watch it happening in places like Aleppo. What's Aleppo? Said Gary Johnson. I don't know, said Jill Stein, but if we get on a plane, I'll bet we can fly to Cincinnati and find out. We see horrors in the wider world. And, you know, the occasional natural disaster. And, yes, people died in Hurricane Matthew, and each one of those is a horror unto itself. But we don't, the American people generally don't know that level of disastrous misery. Not the kind of misery that is so often visited on other parts of the world. Gee, I wonder if there were any civilians anywhere nearby when we sent a couple of cruise missiles into what we claim were the radar installations for Houthi rebel missiles there in Yemen. Reckon any little bodies got carried out of any rubble? Yeah. The missiles never had a chance of even reaching our ships. But, you know, those kind of people have to be taught a lesson. So, no, we don't. We don't know that kind of thing. And so consequently, when we say, you know, let's just, you know, ah, so what if Trump gets in, you know, burn, baby, burn. When we say that, what we mean is that we've never really seen true horror. And that's a distinct possibility. But I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote because only greeniacs. Only the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry, the massive army of can't quite get to 1% of Jill Stein can tell people how to vote. Wake up, sheeple! They're the only ones that can tell people how to vote. I can't. I can't suggest that not endangering Granny's Social Security is a good thing. I can't suggest that not empowering a guy who, by definition, wants to build concentration camps for 11.5 million people here in the United States, that keeping him from doing that's a good thing. I can't do that because, see, you know, I'm just a hillbot. I'm not a real progressive. Because obviously I'm not voting for Jill. Jill not Hill, dude! So I won't be telling anybody how to vote. Okay? Okay. Hey, thanks. It's the get started with Steve evening. Steve in New York issued his challenge, and Steve from Georgia Stan has answered it. And that means that we are down to $325 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Steve's. And thank you very kindly, Ms. Karen and Cletus. We know you are in on this. Absolutely we do. So 325 to go, one at 325, 32. We still got that half. Damn it. Hey, do me a favor. Okay, I think we're okay. This being Friday on the front porch, I wanted to make sure that Skype was working, but I think it is. I'm seeing some greens and some... Yeah. But it's going to suck if it's busted when it comes to front porch time. So what do we got this evening? How about a little good news just to get us started? You know, before we have to walk off into the filthy swamp. Trumplandia. Just a soupçon of good news. Granted, this isn't good news for everybody. But I take it as good news. Fifty-five plus years of absolute stupidity took it on the chin today. Sticking his finger in the eye of those nasty old reactionaries in South Florida. The Obama administration made an announcement today. No longer is there a ban on the amount of rum and Cuban cigars that American travelers can bring back from that island. It was hard enough to get there in the first place, but there was a ban in place once upon a time that said you couldn't bring back more. And $100 will not buy you a good box of Cuban cigars. It damn sure won't buy you a box of, say, Monte Cristo number twos. Monte Cristo Especials. Or Partagas Lusitanias. No. Yeah, Marty's happy. Yippee! Bring on the rum. Well, it's not like they're going to sell it in your local store, Marty. It's just that people coming back can bring more than $100 with them. This was part of a wider range policy. Initiative by the Obama administration, about which Congress can just, you know, suck it. Suck it, teabaggers. 55-plus years of stupidity are coming to an end. Among other things, by executive order, goddamn Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, with his Kenyan Muslim, you slurper executive orders! Cargo ship travel is affected because limits on that have been lifted. It is now also easier for the U.S. and Cuban medical researchers to conduct joint medical research, you know, because one of the shining jewels of that godforsaken communist nightmare, Cuba, is the fact that they have a brilliant medical system that is free to every single person on the island. But they're not free! They can't be Republicans! They can't hate Castro's! God damn it! Oh, the oppressive regime! But they can learn to read, and they have a higher literacy rate than we do, and they have a lower maternal death rate than we do, and they have a higher birth survival rate than we do. Oopsie. Now, these are just little things, not big things. But I like to hope that it might have some personal ramifications for me. Primaries are over, and me and Ed Rabel are buddies again. He goes to Cuba all the time. Because he's been on this program, he's kind of an expert on Cuba. And he speaks Spanish like a Cuban. Ed having noted that the Cuban dialect of Spanish is like talking with a mouthful of rocks. Cool by me, I don't care. It does mean, however, that I can say, oh, Ed, next time you're down there, buddy, Monte Cristo Especiales. Or Particus 858s, those are cool too. Or, you know, maybe a 250 count box of Particus shorts. Those are great little cigars because, you get one of those 7.5-inch monstrosities, a true Churchill, 7.5 by 48. That sucker's going to take you 3 hours. And there's no way you could smoke one of those anywhere that, except places that you can sit down and smoke and you got 3.5 hours. Our lives here in the capitalist wonderland are not that leisurely. Oh, but a 30-minute stick? Yeah, those are nice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then there's the rum. Yeah, bring, Ed, that'll be, maybe the Havana Club Añejo, por favor. Please. Pretty please. So now you can bring back as many as 100 cigars and several bottles of rum. Yeehaw. So again, you know, kind of like last night, we talked about the good news out of Patagonia, the company, not the geographic region. It's nice just to have something that's worth a quiet little smile once in a while. I didn't mean to do that. No, we've got we got plenty of stuff to go into this evening. Almost none of which has anything to do with Trump, unless you guys maybe during the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable insist on bringing up the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Who today. Okay, I'm doing it, aren't I? God damn it. Who declared that the allegations against him by more and more and more, I mean, this has turned into a Cosby lanch. Women saying that he groped or kissed on or LARPed on or smollocked on, you know, sexually assaulted. That list is growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And, of course, taking to his preferred communications platform, because 140 characters is about the outside limit of Trump's ability to really process information. You know, don't be fooled by the fact that the man's rich. If he was brilliant, he'd be oodles richer than he is. As it is, he's just a privileged numbnuts. But he took to Twitter to declare that what is being, the allegations coming forth are, and these are his words, not mine. And so, I mean, it will have to apply some logic and word knowing to this, but he said that the women's allegations are false smears. That got a couple of sirens blinking for me. False smears. Isn't it in the nature of a smear to be false? I mean, think about the smear that the George W. Bush campaign ran on John McCain back in 2000 when they said, did you know they had robocalls going in South Carolina, Stan, where people respond viscerally to such things? Would it be okay with you if you knew that John McCain had a Negro child? Would it be all right with you if you knew that John McCain was the father of a black baby? That was a smear, because it created the impression that somehow or another McCain had been going down to the quarters and having himself a high old time. Never mind the fact that there's a high population of people passing for white in South Carolina who have exactly those kinds of evenings in their genetic past. False smears. One way you can look at that is that, in other words, he said they're true. False smears are true statements. Well, you know, Brother Deacon Asa, into each life some rain must fall. Brother Deacon Asa saying, well, Bob, you didn't even give a shout out to my beloved Cohibas. Yeah, but see, you're up in communist Canada, and you can buy them anytime you want to. Heavily taxed, mind you. But you can buy them anytime you want to. And for me, I don't know. I've had Cohibas. I think they're probably much like Notre Dame football, overrated. Bum, bum, bum. Overrated. I'm a traditionalist. I like my H. Upmans. I like my my Partagas, my Monte Cristos, even certain shapes of the Romeo y Julieta brand. Hoyo de Monterrey is a little mild for my taste. Quai d'Orsay can be interesting, although it's just slightly stronger than like a Macanudo. But it's Cuban, and therefore a much better cigar. All over the Caribbean basin, particularly the Dominican Republic, and especially Honduras and Nicaragua in Central America, at the news of the lifting of the... There are people, capitalists muttering, oh, shit. Because it's quite possible that the days of the $9 Dominican cigar and the $9 Honduran cigar are coming to an end. I mean, they'll still be there, but they've existed on a cachet. Grown from Cuban seed in Honduran soil. That really only works if one does not have access to a good Cuban cigar. Yeah, I'm sure out there people are going, God damn, Bob, why are you talking about tobacco? Well, because we like to run out in front of the curve here. And it's one of those 3-2-1 where and in this instance, it will not be the right wing, it will be the left that will crank up the outrage wambulance. Why is Barack Obama giving his stamp of approval to tobacco? Tobacco kills! Yes, it does. So do cars. So does fracking. So do pipelines. So does oil. So does coal. So does mountaintop removal. So does diesel exhaust. And by the way, for those paying attention, you do not inhale cigars. Stop telling people how to smoke, Bob! No, really. Go ahead. Inhale a Cuban cigar. Inhale any cigar. Most likely you'll turn some lovely shades of green. And, you know, that just a sidelight on that. I've always been kind of fascinated and appalled, I would add, by the concept of the blunt. You know what a blunt is. Now, for the geezers among us, back in the day, we called a cigarette made of marijuana, we called it a doobie, or a joint, or, you know, a number. Let's twist up a number. And one traditionally rolled it with cigarette rolling papers, preferably the finer the paper, the better. My personal favorite back in the day, and they're no longer made, were the cabaret width club papers, because you could pull one of those little suckers out of the pack, one of the little leaves. You could light it, and there's no ash. It's not like flash paper. Flash paper's got fucking gunpowder in it. It was just gone, which meant that you were inhaling cannabis smoke and not so much in the way of paper. But blunts are rolled with... It started out before the tobacco industry, sleazy bastards that they are, figured out they could make a buck on it. A blunt got its name because you would go and buy a Philly blunt, which is as nasty a machine-rolled cigar as has ever been conceptualized. And so you'd cut it with a razor blade, and then you would unwrap the external wrapper, which is a sort of faux tobacco made of, like, floor sweepings and scrapings, and they add a bunch of filthy chemicals to it, and they turn it into a sort of noxious brown goo. And then it's much like the papermaking process, only it's got a shit ton of nicotine and tars and cyanide and all the fun stuff that American processed tobacco has in it. And roll it out into a sheet and make cigar wrappers for crummy cigars out of it. And like I said, the Philly blunt being... And suddenly, a generation of young people smoking cannabis felt like they had to roll their cannabis in that, you know, because it was longer than a paper. Well, goddamn, go to the used record store and buy a copy of Cheech and Chong's Big Bamboo, and it's got a paper in it the size of an album cover. Granted, you have to buy it. Hey, you know, size doesn't matter. Quality does. So now, and I think this is probably an unresearched problem, now you've got a generation of cannabis smokers who are casually addicted to nicotine because they've been wrapping their weed in and now, you know, the raps come in mango and peach passion and grape ecstasy and strawberry tango, and because if you get it just regular, it tastes like shit. And I just don't get it. How the hell did we get here? Huh? It's like my old driver's ed teacher. He fell asleep on the passenger side during driver's ed class and said, "Just keep going until I tell you to turn." And 40 miles later, down in Russellville, Alabama, he looked up and said, "Where are we?" And then he told somebody to turn, and they went back to class. I was just doing what I was told. But where are we? 25 minutes before the hour on this Friday on the front porch. Please forgive me. Because we've spent a week, minus one night, in the filth pits. And sometimes it's just nice to talk and carry on, laugh a little bit, smile some. Only you, Brother Deacon Asa, only you. I love those blunt cigar wrappers. They give you this false sense of luxury. Okay. If I could afford Cuban cigars, I'd never smoke anything else. And because you don't inhale them, they're not nearly as noxious for you. Yeah, I guess there's some oral risk, but no, not the deep lung risk. But anyway, I brought up the story about the rum and the cigars. Because there will be an outcry from the left, predictable, that Barack Obama has failed America yet again because we're going to allow tourists to bring back more than $100 worth of cigars. Yeah, I know. But you heard it here first, right? You know, you can send me a note and say, yep, the old magic eight ball's working fine, Bob, when the outcry is raised. And thank you very kindly to Clarence, who has now taken us down to $315 to go in fundraising. Much obliged and much appreciated, Clarence. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully, Steve, and Clarence will get some company over the course of the next 2 hours and 20 minutes, and we'll knock down that $355 fundraising goal to zero, or maybe more than zero, which would be freaking awesome. And I can tell Marty's probably already trying to figure out a way to get to Cuba. And that's the thing. Cuban rum's great, but it would be ever so much neater to drink it in the, you know, a daiquiri in the Floridita. All right, enough funning around. I presume by now that you caught the story earlier this week of Ruth Bader Ginsburg opening her octogenarian mouth and shoving her foot in it. The notorious RBG put on a shiny white suit of white privilege and tarnished her reputation. She was interviewed. The interview was released on Monday. Katie Couric of Yahoo News Tell me, 15, 20 years ago, who thought you'd be anybody with Katie Couric of Yahoo News. Well, I mean, when you get right down to it, Katie Couric has always worked for Yahoo News, hasn't she? For-profit media. But Katie Couric scored an interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and asked her what she thought of Colin Kaepernick's protest of the national anthem, proving that she, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has absolutely no conception whatsoever of the experience of people of color and oppressed peoples in this country. Ruth Bader Ginsburg declared that Colin Kaepernick's protest is, these are quotey words here, dumb and disrespectful. A man protesting the epidemic of police violence against people of color in the United States is, according to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, dumb and disrespectful. Answering the question, she said that it was definitely legal for Colin Kaepernick to do what he was doing, but it was, quote, a terrible thing to do. What do I think? I think it's really dumb of them. Would I arrest them for doing it? No. I think it's dumb and disrespectful. I'd have the same answer if you asked me about flag burning. I think it's a terrible thing to do, but I wouldn't lock a person up for doing it. I would point out how ridiculous it seems to me to do such an act. If they want to be stupid, there's no law that should be preventive. If they want to be arrogant, there's no law that prevents them from that. Hey, friends, what's another word for arrogant? When applied to people of color in the United States. Why, Alex, what is uppity? Let's see how that sounds if we put common parlance to it. If they want to be stupid, there's no law that should be preventive. If they want to be uppity, there's no law that prevents them from that. What I would do is strongly take issue with the point of view that they are expressing when they do that. Well, you know, the point of view being expressed is that the police should not be able to summarily execute people of color because scared, because PCP, because Lucy's, because running, because big, because strong arm robbery, because 12. She strongly takes issue with the point of view they're expressing when they do that. So, that's been floating around out there in the Moronosphere for about a week now. And apparently somebody has noticed enough to make Ruth Bader Ginsburg uncomfortable about her manifestation of abject ignorance and lack of empathy and privilege and all the other stuff that goes with it. Somewhere along the way, somebody managed to ask her about it or nudge her about it in the middle of all the other Trumpalooza that we've been dealing with for days and days and goddamn days. And so Ruth Bader Ginsburg made a statement today. She said today that she was inappropriately dismissive and harsh in her assessment of Colin Kaepernick's protest, and it's a protest that has spread far and wide through the country. Yeah, it was inappropriately dismissive and harsh. Notice she didn't say wrong. No, by way of apology, she said, barely aware of the incident or its purpose. My comments were inappropriately dismissive and harsh. I should have declined to respond. That is a long damn way from saying I was wrong, or from saying, of course, I understand the outrage and the agony, or I can at least try to understand the outrage and the agony of communities of color when they see the men in their community gunned down relentlessly, recklessly, and remorselessly by law enforcement in this country. But no. And if I may, and I will, whether I may or not, because you can't turn the microphone off. Well, you can. All you got to do is stop supporting the program. But if that's going to happen over this, then, well, we really didn't deserve to make it to our 11th anniversary now, did we? Now, what this is indicative of what it's like to be a member of the Supreme Court. This bolsters my position that there's really no such thing as a liberal member of the Supreme Court. There are conservative members of the Supreme Court, and more conservative members of the Supreme Court, and fascist members of the Supreme Court. Ain't no liberals. Because by virtue of, by definition, the court being a function of the law is incapable of liberality. Because the court system props up a legal system whose primary purpose in the United States of America is not the dispensation of justice, but rather the protection of money. After the protection of money comes the implementation of punishment for people incapable of securing sufficient legal defense to get them out of it. And then at the bottom of the heap is moron management. But justice? No. Of course, exhibit one in this is the fact that it was a 9-0 decision in the Sweet Granny McCluckey case that said that a sweet, harmless, loving, Roman Catholic, wild-eyed, radical granny had a greater right to shove her views in the face of a woman trying to walk into planned pregnancy than the woman had of being able to walk unaccosted into Planned Parenthood. All at the same time, maintaining their own buffer zone around the Supreme Court. I'm glad we got to that story. I feel like it was important. Waiting for an outcome now, waiting for results, because yesterday was a very, very important day in Oklahoma Stan. Because yesterday in Oklahoma Stan was the day that all the Christians were supposed to pray for the oil field. The Reverend Tom Bedow of Ada, Oklahoma said, "The oil field is hurting right now." we're asking churches all over Oklahoma to open their doors, put on a pot of coffee, and pray for the oil field. And not only for the oil field, but the state, because the economy of our state is so connected to the oil field. How about praying that you stop electing fucking idiots who tie the economy of the state to a single natural resource, a single finite natural resource, huh? Yeah, I know. And as Malloy pointed out last night, they weren't interested in the prayers of Jews, of Muslims, Baha'i, Hindus. Nope. Just the Christians, because only the Christian God and his little baby son have the ability to save the oil fields. Amen and amen. Not to be outdone, I expect a Pray for the Coalfields Day. Any day now here in almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan. Yeah, I noticed that too, Marty. Marty's put on a pot of coffee. I don't think a pot of Joe is going to help make it rain oil. A pipeline failure, maybe. Reckon there were any subsidiary prayers there for... And by the way, sweet baby Jesus, please stop all them earthquakes that we keep a-starting with our fracking. No, I guess not. Mm-mm. Too much to hope for. Yeah, okay, we can't get through an hour without a little bit of Trump sleaze, can we? Just a little bit. I mean, I'm drawn toward it like a moth to flame. I can't help it. The Howard Stern tapes are now coming out. I don't know if Benito Cheeto will declare those to be false smears as well. It's kind of hard to do that, being as how they're actual recordings of actual words that emanated from the anus-like mouth of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Way back when... She was having a spate of film hits as a precocious teenaged actress. Howard Stern asked Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane, about the hotness of Lindsay Lohan, who had a couple of hits. One of them was Mean Girls, which spawned a couple of great lines. I mean, every time we have an intelligent design story, that I have to haul out this clip. It comes from the point in the film where Lindsay Lohan, whose parents had been like anthropologists or something in Africa and had schooled her themselves, and that's the setup. She gets thrown into this public school milieu and, you know, the adjustment difficulties and things like that. And she tells people she was homeschooled, and she said that immediately makes them think that, her character says that immediately makes them think that she's some sort of fundamentalist.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Of course, the sad thing being that shortly thereafter, Ken Ham opened a creation museum in Kentucky, which he followed up with a giant goddamned Ark theme park, which presents what was funny in that context as actual reality, and it's all tax-free. So, Mean Girls was a good movie. Tina Fey was in that. Jamie Lee Curtis starred with Lindsay Lohan in a remake of Freaky Friday, and it's one of those body swap films. The mind of the teenage girl enters the body of Jamie Lee Curtis, and Jamie Lee Curtis's serious grown-up mind enters the body of the teenager. Hilarity ensues. So at the height of Lindsay Lohan's popularity, she began a slide into various forms of substance abuse and the kind of chaos that also often attends child stars, because Hollywood chews up children and spits them out like so much pulp. And so, in the course of an interview by Howard Stern, Stern asked Trump, "Can you imagine the sex with this troubled teen?" And then Trump responds, "Yeah, you're probably right. She's probably deeply troubled, and therefore great in bed. How come the deeply troubled women, you know, deeply, deeply troubled, they're always the best in bed?" So, just to be clear, Donald Trump said that he would like to have sex with an emotionally compromised, mentally compromised teenage girl. Jamie Lee Curtis responded. She said, "I'm appalled. Lindsay needed help and guidance, not your gross, lecherous, lewd commentary. You are the Republican nominee for the presidency." And, of course, there's more class in that response than in the entirety of Donald Trump, his nasty-ass family, and everything he's ever fucking touched. I'm sorry, we had to have a Trump story. And there's lots of other stuff to talk about. And we will probably touch on many of them on Friday on the Front Porch. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, I encourage and invite you to do so. It's easy to do. Just get on Skype, fire it up, and pick yourself, you know, and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, one word, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, and he'll toss out the breadcrumb trail for you to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and direct your attention to the Bob signal. Bouncing off the clouds or being projected onto the clouds right now, even as we speak. That's another thing to add to the list. One of these days we're going to have a real Bob signal. But, hey, design folks, what would a Bob signal look like? Just a big B? Nah. That's no good. There's sort of a silhouette cut out of, you know, me with a Cuban cigar. I don't have the ego for this. I'm sorry. I don't. If you can't manage Skype at all, you're welcome to use the stress line named for the inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller. That number is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. And hey, as we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, a big shout-out to the gang at Master McGrath's Restaurant and Irish Pub in Seabrook, New Hampshire. I'm told that a few folks there have taken to listening to the program. So, slunge, y'all. and I don't know, fill up a pint of something or a wee dram of something and sit back and enjoy the conversation. I'm awfully tickled to hear about it, and thanks for letting me know, Bill, up in New Hampshire. Thank you very kindly. So, yeah, let's get a little break going and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see where it takes us. This is listener-supported, emphasis on the listener-supported part, Conversation Radio. We've got $315 yet to raise on the evening. PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And hopefully we won't have a fundraising deficit going into Monday. Okie dokie, okie dokie. All right, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Dressed in black, she's a hungry child. No one knows who she is or what her name is. I don't know where she came from or what her game is. Hot child in the city. Hot child. Young boys, they all want to take her home. She goes downtown, the boys all stop and stare. When she comes downtown, she walks like she just don't care, yeah.
Hot child.
Distance dedication going out from the horn to Donald J. Trump, Republican presidential nominee. Quite possibly one of the skeeviest, sleaziest, most disturbing, creepy songs ever written. Just for you, Donald. Yeah, I can't help wondering if whoever wrote the lyrics to that song isn't on some sex offender registry somewhere. you can't get anything past Dr. John. Subject line, that bumper, I see what you did there, Kincaid. And, you know, you can probably still go and find, like, the American Bandstand appearance of Nick Gilder. And he was skeevy looking when the song was a hit. I can't help but think he looks a lot like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror by now.
No, but those lyrics are indefensible. The minute I saw the Lindsay Lohan story, I knew that had to be the bumper that followed it, because it's just as skeevy as Trump is. Ay, ay, ugh. Just nasty with a capital. Ugh. Hot child, young child. How young, Nick Gilder? How young? I mean, I realized the 70s had their issues, but really? Sorry, I can't resist playing DJ once in a while. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line and bid good evening to longtime Skype Horn Malloy chat room moderator Sparky out in the man cave. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob, I'm recovering.
From?
Mother Nature gave us a big blowjob last night.
Oh, really?
So I got a bunch of down tree limbs and stuff.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, because I saw a report of, like, tornadoes in Washington State. Because
well,
that's normal.
One in Oregon. But we had wind gusts of 51 miles an hour here last night. We lost power for a while.
Did it raise hell with the redwood?
No, it just shook all the dead shit out of it. There was one limb that was already broke off that was hanging up there, and it started to come down yesterday. So I got a long pole out and knocked it down, got it the rest of the way. But then a tree right next to the two redwoods decided to lose its top, and it fell over right towards the redwoods. So I got that to clean up. But this big old valley oak out here is notorious for dropping limbs in windstorms.
So, but I mean, tornadoes.
It falls on... No. Oh, we've had them here before. Just they come down just one spot and go away. They've had one south, about 30 miles south one time.
It's just not, it's not something you hear about all the time.
But we're supposed to get hit again tonight with another bet.
Oh, really? More coming?
In wind. Last through the weekend. So I'll be in when it's nice and warm and toasty tomorrow if it's raining, watching football and NASCAR.
No, where are we racing tomorrow?
Kansas.
Okay. That could be fun, because this is all about, these are the playoffs now, right?
Yeah, they're in the round of 12. They already went through the round of 16. They got two races in the round of 12. And one of the races is next week at Talladega.
Ooh, Talladega. That could be fun. By the way, Carol says, I just got home in time to hear Sparky talking about getting a big blowjob, and he's talking like it's a bad thing. Not a Trump fan?
Not when it's Mother Nature.
Yeah, too much teeth, right?
Yeah, she tears shit up.
Oh, this is not... Oh, this is only going to get worse, isn't it? I tell you what, before this gets all the way into the gutter, let's check in and see what's happening with Steve from Georgistan. What's happening, Steve?
Brother Bob, what's going on, man?
I don't feel as nasty as I have at the end of most of the filibobsters this week and last week. It just, sometimes it's just nice to talk about stuff that isn't nasty ass Trump.
Well, for your listening enjoyment, I posted the Nick Gilder Hot Shot in the City from the Midnight Special. It's in the chat room.
Oh, I watched it. Yep. Check it out. I took a quick look, and you know what? Skeevy.
You're right. He does. He looks like I don't want to cast spares on Nick Gilder, but he looks exactly like you said he is. Skeevy, you know? He looks like a junkie. I mean, I'm just going to come out.
And you know what's worse? 2006, some other band covered Hot Child in the City. I mean, because I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing, I actually went and looked up the lyrics one time to make sure that this song is about a young girl, and by virtue of the words used, you know, underage, who's on the streets of some city, and he wants to have sexy time with her.
Well, I mean, it was kind of widespread back then, Bob. If you remember ZZ Top from Fandango, there was a tune called Francine Just Turned 13. She's My Teenage Dream. I mean, it's nothing new, you know, but
I had forgotten that. It's been a long time since I heard it. Yeah, yeah. Maybe these are clues?
I don't know. Maybe they were prophets. Who knows, man?
It's just wrong.
You know I work during the day. You know that. And I took a lunch at about 1. I thought, well, I'm going to turn on CNN just to see if there's any more Trump shenanigans going on.
Well, of course there were.
Yeah, he never fails to let you down. Not just one, two more fine women, and I say that with respect. I don't mean that derogatory. Two more fine ladies came out of the closet and you know, said they were groping all over him.
Yeah. And the best, I don't know, it's hard to describe this as the best part, but I don't know if you're aware of this, but somebody booked America's Best Christian, Mike Pence, the guy who felt like rape needed to be defined as forcible in federal legislation. Somebody booked him on CBS this morning where he explained that he just doesn't understand it when that Michelle Obama says that there's something wrong with what Donald Trump admitted that he did. Stand by.
Republican vice presidential nominee and Indiana Governor Mike Pence joins us now. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Listening to that, do you understand that if these accusations are true, and based on what Donald Trump said on the bus, is very, very offensive to women?
Well, let me say, first, as a father of two daughters and as a public person, we take these kind of allegations very seriously. But Donald Trump made it very clear yesterday. He has categorically denied these allegations and these kind of unsubstantiated claims being given so much focus in the media. At the time, we have hard evidence flowing out of the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton years. We had evidence this week, in fact, that while she was Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton and her aides actually gave preferential treatment of the Clintons.
We would like to ask all those
reconstruction contracts in Haiti.
We would like
that
to ask all those questions
that
of her. But
very little attention, and these unsubstantiated claims are dominating the news.
But we have Donald Trump, running mate, here this morning. The second question, have you tried to find out from him in conversation whether any of this is true?
Donald Trump has assured the
public. But have
public,
you talked to him directly about this?
Absolutely.
And
he's told me that.
And you believe him? Do you believe him?
Donald Trump has asserted that all of these recent unsubstantiated allegations are categorically false, and I do believe him.
You believe him?
I do believe
that they're not true. Women are liars.
Yeah, the Donald Trump that I've come to know, that my...
You believe him? That Donald Trump was lying himself when he said that he sexually assaults women?
These people have no shame.
No shame, Steve. No, no morals. No ethics.
Who else is equally as bad? And I heard Randy play this today. old fat pill popping, what do you call him? Hush Limbaugh?
Oh, Flush Flimball?
Flush Flimball, yeah. He actually came out and said that us liberals are hung up with the concept of consent. Well, hell yeah, we're hung up with the concept of consent. Without consent, you can't move forward.
Well,
without
I mean,
consent,
goddamn, flush.
It's a violation.
Consent is a pretty cool hang-up to have if you're not into raping people. But then right. again, we're talking about Flush Flimball, who took a bottle of Viagra with somebody else's name on it, which was illegal, with him on an all-boys vacation to the Dominican Republic, which, of course, is notorious for little boy sex trade.
Exactly, but what a stupid thing to say. I mean, I've been taught since I was old enough to walk, without consent, you don't move forward, you know? You respect people's boundaries.
And then there's the whole idea of, as Mike Pence describes it, unsubstantiated accusations. As Carol Baker points out, that's the thing about sexual assault. Rarely do the perps tape them so they can be fucking substantiated. Let's check back in with Mike here for a second, shall we?
I mean, but you speak about the issue of character. It really is extraordinary that in the wake of revelations, and last weekend Donald Trump made it clear he apologized for what he said 11 years ago. He showed humility. He showed heart. He focused that national presidential debate back on the issues that...
He humped a chair, he stalked Hillary Clinton around the stage.
...that really affect the American people at home and abroad. And yet, to be honest with you, with all due respect, as this avalanche of emails continues to emerge, Hillary Clinton advocating open borders when she was giving a speech in Brazil, advocating socialized medicine when she gave a speech in Canada...
Not socialized medicine! Oh my God!
But I have to tell you, this Haitian...
Yeah, wait.
Just locker room talk. So let me
well,
get
he
you.
Said it, he said it. He made it very clear that it was just talk. And when these latest unsubstantial...
Ah, notice Mike has learned not to say locker room anymore. Because a lot of people who spend time in locker rooms have spoken up and said, nah, you know, we don't talk like that in locker rooms.
...heated allegations came forward. He's categorically denied them.
Let me get you to respond then to the First Lady. She said...
By the way... Get the hockey pucks, a couple of strips of duct tape. You're going to love this. Probably bite right through it.
This wasn't just locker room banter. This was a powerful individual speaking openly and freely about sexually predatory behavior. At the very least, does that make you uncomfortable?
Well, I have a lot of respect for the First Lady and the job that she's done mm-hmm. for the American people over the last 7.5 years. But I don't understand the basis of her claim. Donald Trump.
You don't
has,
believe his language was
Donald
sexually
Trump,
predatory?
Well, no, I already spoke about my concerns about the language he used in that 11-year-old video. But the what he's made it clear is that was talk, regrettable talk on his part, but that there were no actions and that he's categorically denied these latest unsubstantiated allegations.
How does he manage to keep doing that without saying he's admitted he's a liar?
There is something pathologically wrong with these people, Bob. I mean, they're deviants in every sense of the word. How they can rationalize this kind of behavior with a straight face is beyond, it escapes me.
For what it is, it's stunning, but you know, he just can't, she's done some lovely work, you know, trying to take away our fatty snacks and everything here in Merca, but I don't understand.
Even Uncle Chuckles, Pat Roberts, was giving, you know, the one that came down on Clinton the hardest for his Lewinsky indiscretion, he gave Trump a pass. Just flat out gave him a pass. Said, well, you can't hold something against a man that was locker room banter from 11 years ago. Seriously?
I know.
I am so glad I turned my back on these religious freaks, Bob. And, you know, when I die, I'm comfortable with where I'm going to go.
Into the dirt?
Probably.
Or scattered over some dirt, or maybe over a river, or over a mountain, or maybe a field in Virginia somewhere?
I'm 51 years old. I think back 52 years ago, and that's probably what it's going to feel like, nothingness. And I'm okay with that, you know.
Well, I mean, it's not going to feel like anything.
Right, exactly.
Because you're not going to be capable of feeling.
Right, right. I doubt I'm going to be in some cloud playing a fiddle or in some place with some dude poking me with a pitchfork, you know. And I'm satisfied.
Wait a minute. You get one of these. Not only for the quality of the line, but the slip that you made into good Southern is some feller poking me with a pitchfork. There was some dialect in there, and I have to offer up some respect for that. Hey, let's check in for a minute because the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is blathering in North Carolina. And a minute ago, he had a woman of color up there who was proven that that it is possible for black people to love Donald Trump. But he's behind the microphone now. Let's check in for just a second, shall we?
10-4.
All right, get the bleach out.
Trump administration, there will be consequences. They're not going to be leaving so easy, folks, not like the old days. The Hillary Clinton documents released by WikiLeaks make more clear than ever just how much is at stake come November 8th. Such an important day. Such an important day. Get out and vote, everybody. Get out and vote.
On November 28th.
In an email sent to John Podesta on August 17, 2014, Hillary wrote that the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia are, quote, providing clandestine financial and logistical support to ISIL. Yet, in that same year, Bill and Hillary accepted a check from Saudi Arabia.
God
so
damn.
Hillary thinks that they are funding ISIS, but still takes their money. And you know their views on gays, and you know their views on women. Takes a lot of money. I think she should give back the $25 to $35 million she's taken from Saudi Arabia.
You know, it's going to be kind of tough because it's probably already spent. And, you know, going and shaking down some babies in Africa that have had AIDS medications bought for them with that Saudi money, that's going to be a little tough, isn't it? Because, and this is something that's hard for Trumpansies, and even the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry to understand is that there's more than just the Clinton Foundation isn't just the Clintons' fucking bank. It's actually a philanthropy that has done a tremendous amount of good.
A lot of good, if you'll dig down deep with these folks they ain't got sense enough to do.
Quit telling people how to vote, Steve!
I'm guilty as charged, Bob.
Hey, let me run over to the stress line and make sure that we get Jim in here in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
Hello?
There you are.
Bob?
Jim.
Yeah. You still there?
Yeah, you're here. I'm here. The
Oh, okay. Well, no. Actually, I'm on my cell phone. Let me be very clear. I've got a theme song for the Trump campaign. It's a Rolling Stones song. Big surprise. Stray Cat Blues. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're only 13 years old.
Oh yeah. Oh no. There's plenty. Yeah, I know.
I think that would be the perfect song for him. Don't you?
I'd forgotten about that one, but yes.
And I understand it through the Rolling Stones point of view, but for Trump, I mean, God damn it! When do you think he started deciding he was going to run for president? A year or two ago?
Oh, no, he's been talking about it since the late 90s, if I recall correctly. I mean, I remember going up and down the road and hearing somebody interviewing him on right-wing radio, because that's all there is around here, and him talking about he might run for president someday.
Yeah, but did he think he was going to be able to buy out everybody and from, you know, even with all his money, I don't think he's as rich as he says he is, or, you know, it helps. Damn it, I wish Dad would have left me, you know, one-tenth of what Dad, his, you know,
yeah,
his dad left him. But, you know, it's a joke, you know, and, you know, and I have an admission to make. I'm probably still voting Green, but I may vote Hillary. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. You know, I've kind of reached that point.
Well, I think it would matter, Jim, if it got to the point where there was even the slightest possibility of Hillary Clinton winning Louisiana. Then I would say to you, you know, why not, Jim? Why not? Because the repudiation of right-wing politics by a southern state would be a pretty huge moment, and I think you acknowledge you'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I mean, although I still have I'm not a big Hillary fan. This monarchy shit for presidency, which we've had for the last 30 plus years, has got to stop. I mean, what's next? What's the name? The daughter, what's the daughter's name?
Chelsea.
Chelsea's going to be running?
Oh, I don't think Chelsea's ever going to run. It's very seldom that you see children of presidents run for the presidency because, where's Amy Carter?
Well, it's just like my dad was in politics, and none of, you know, I've kind of thought about it, but it's too much, you know.
Right, you saw it up close and personal.
And my I've got two lawyer brothers, and and they have absolutely no interest in being in politics, you know. I mean, unless you got like some sort of self-righteous, but some sort of what you consider righteous, and I don't mean that in a negative way, some sort of campaign you gotta, and there's a ton of them, you know, like what you're doing with the Cold Mountain stuff, and what I think what's going on down here with the oil drilling, you know, there's a lot to do, but it's going to take a lot of money until we get a secret way of getting money out. Have you talked to Jill Stein about that? I think she's got a plan.
To what? Get money out of politics?
Yeah, I think she's got a plan. What do you think?
No, I don't think she has a plan.
I'm just messing with you.
I don't think Jill Stein has a plan for at least not one that's grounded in reality. Because again, let's note, getting rid of Citizens United only returns us to the nasty money in politics status before that case was decided, which was decidedly not nice. Not good.
Right, and the people that have the control of that, they're not going to let that go easy. I mean, it's going to almost take a revolution to do that. I mean, that was the great thing about Bernie. And he was a legislator and all that. He'd been through all that stuff, and he had, you know, he had the knowledge, but, you know, as with life, we're left with the hand we're dealt. So, I'm still going Green, but I'm leaning a little bit. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I might vote Hillary. I don't hold me to that.
No, I won't. But let's bear in mind, Jim, that for you as well as for me, where you are and where I am, even voting for Hillary is a radical act.
I know. Well, not only that, I was going to tell you, and I forgot to tell you yesterday when I talked to you, you could vote for the Green Party, and it's not going to affect the electoral vote one iota.
No, I could, but I absolutely refuse to. I refuse to participate in even remotely empowering people who have no freaking comprehension of the American political process whatsoever.
Well, okay. Well, then I guess that, okay, I can sleep easier knowing that you're not also going to end up voting for Trump somehow out of the blue.
No, hell no, I'm not going to vote for Trump. I considered leaving the presidency blank, but I'm not going to do it. Now, for me, it's a bigger question, the next slot down on the ballot, the governor's race. Because you've got a couple of slobbering mainstream party candidates who are neck and neck trying to get their heads up Donald Trump's ass, the Democrat and the Republican. Because the Democrat only became a Democrat, you know, a year or so ago. At the urging of Joe, never voted for a Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. Charlotte Pritt.
Right, well.
Charlotte Pritt was actually the Democratic nominee for governor in 1996, and Joe Manchin rat-fucked her. Okay? Let's be clear. He rat-fucked her, and his buddies started Democrats for Underwood, who was this creepy old corpse of a shambling drunk, the first executive vice president of Island Creek Coal Company. And Joe Manchin was so disgusted at the idea that a woman would be governor of West Virginia instead of him because she beat him in the primary that he rat-fucked her. And she was a good candidate back then. And she has good ideas now. But she does not have a prayer.
Well, Bob, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. Good ideas and all that. Your state seems a lot like mine in that there's a lot of fucking stupid people in it. There's no other way for me to put it. They, you know, just like going with Trump, thinking somehow he's going to bring back all the jobs and it's going to be a Trump euphoria and,
Trumptopia.
You don't have to worry about environmental problems. And you know, we talked about a little bit about that over the yesterday and the last couple of weeks. I mean, I wasn't bullshitting. I don't think the planet has that much longer in the grand scheme of things. You know, if the planet keeps going the way it's going.
Now, Jim, let me address that real quick. The planet is going to be just fine.
I know exactly where you're going from.
Humanity's ability to live on it is what's in the balance.
Right, I'm talking about us living on it. Okay? I'm talking about us living on it. You know, the third rock from the sun will do just fine. It has been.
You know, until about 4 billion years from now when it gets, you know, all raisined and then all cindered by the explosion of the dying fusion reactor in the core of the sun.
Yeah, but see, sometimes I get so pissed off at the human race, I don't give a fuck what they do. You know what I mean? That was kind of yesterday. I'm a little bit calmer today. So, a little bit more optimistic at the moment. Let me have another beer and I'll see what happens. But
make it a good one.
So,
yeah. Yeah, maybe a nice Abita.
Yeah, that might do. No, actually, I've got some Heineken. Or I've got one more Heineken. So.
Oh, that'll do. That'll do. All right. Well, stick around and chime in if something grabs hold of you, and we'll check in with a few more members of the conversation.
That's what I was hoping for.
Sounds good. Meanwhile, a note just came in from Michael in Madison, subject line, Jill's plan. I think she had a plan to get to Columbus or Cleveland or Cincinnati or wherever the hell. We all saw how that worked out. Nicely done. Nicely done. Michael also pointed out, apparently Nick Gilder has a much different prime directive than Picard or, dare I say, even Kirk. Nick Gilder admitted his interest in sex, especially underage prostitution. It's so much a part of everything we do, and we don't completely understand why we're doing it. It's our prime directive, almost, on this planet. Seek out and multiply, you know. Seek out and multiply, you know. I write stories around it because it intrigues people so much. And I'd never heard this, but according to the article, Nick Gilder was nicknamed the Nabokov of the jukebox. Ill. Just ill. Let's see. Quick check back in with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. This is the audience participation.
We have to take care of our people, right? These are great people. Have to take care of our people. And we have to take care of our country, because we don't want to be a divided country anymore. We're very divided, and we're going to take care of our country. Some of these people got here 9 hours and 10 hours ago, right? Right? Some of these people. So we can understand how there can be some problems. Are you doing okay over there? Look okay? We have tough people in this room, let me tell you. It's hot. It's hot. The other night they said Donald Trump was sweating. I was in a room.
It's hot. It's hot. You know, like my daughter. It, right. Jesus Christ. It's hot. Yeah. Marty, please, Bob, I'm sober. No more. All right. All right. I'll do my best. Let's check in with the rest of the group. Good evening, Snork. How are you?
Hello. Is the new microphone clear?
The new microphone sounds great.
All right. We have three more days before the floods peak in the Carolinas. And I'm still not seeing people talking much about global warming.
Not there. Well, they're not allowed to. Nobody in government is even legally permitted to.
And the winds on the West Coast were exceeding what would be the standard for a hurricane. Because somewhere in Washington, it got 103-mile-per-hour sustained winds.
And
yeah, remember Earthy?
Yeah.
Poor Earth?
Yeah.
I just saw a picture on Facebook of her house. She had a tree fall on her.
Oh, no.
Doesn't look like there's a lot of damage, though.
Well, still, there's no good way for a tree to fall on your house. There are less bad ways. So it's good that it was less bad, but still. Snork, where did those winds come from?
I believe the polar region is unstable this part of the time of the year. And we might even start seeing the term astable, which means that they're not assuming any stable position at all. They're constantly wobbling. Polar wobbles are what was responsible for that dip into the freezing weather all the way to the tip of Miami a few years ago.
Somebody, by the way, somebody needs to mute. We're hearing some lovely phlegm-based noises.
Okay.
Go ahead, Snort.
But these polar wobbles, it's happening this early in the year, pretty bad. We've had temperatures in the low or in mid-20s already this year. And this is in northeastern Iowa. And, the worst winter we can have is where we have warm days and cold days. There's plants like strawberries and raspberries, which a lot of creatures out in the wild eat. A strawberry does fine if it stays cold all winter, but it does not do well if there's a day where it gets above the point where they come out of dormancy. And there are other plants as well that are necessary for wildlife that are, react the same. The polar vortex incursion last year, one of the incursions didn't have freezing that far south, but the incursion was all the way down to Central America.
So do you expect to have another one of those amazing little jet stream thingies where the jet stream dips down into the Gulf of Mexico?
Yep, that's a polar vortex incursion, or is it an excursion? depends on, I guess, which way you're looking at it. But yes, and what when you have an area with extremely high winds like we just had off of the West Coast, that means that the pressure in that area is dropped and will be drawing this inertia of air will draw in to fill that hole up in that area and later on get passed along. So that already in itself will generate quite an incursion.
Which in turn will create a nasty ass for it. You know, that's the kind of stuff that delivers the freezing rain that makes makes roads and power lines ice over in the South and makes southern governments declare martial law. Right.
That's correct. Now it's not only bad here; it's bad on the other side too. Because if the cold wobbles towards us, it means the warm wobbles up into Siberia, which means that their wildlife is going to suffer because they're going to get this burst of warm air that they can't tolerate the heat change positive. And then it'll suck extra moisture into the air. So when the wobble wobbles back, all of that will come out as the dew point falls. And we'll have the same problems here. So we could be looking at some more really strange weather even in the next couple of months.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Tomorrow's Bridge Day here in West Virginia, and I'm kind of hoping we're going to have good... It's been kind of gray and drizzly today, but they say that there's a fighting chance that tomorrow we'll have partly sunny skies and a high of 74. Of course, you get 74, 876 feet in the air on a single arch bridge across a gorge. It can still be right nippy.
Yeah, oh, I can remember it snowing near Sevierville, Tennessee, in the summer, right around July.
Wouldn't be surprising.
So, you know, the people getting all this rain in North Carolina in just a short period of time, it is raining up to, 10 inches today predicted for that area. We could see ice forming up in the mountains, which could delay and give another shock to the people that are in the lower grounds. So I wish we'd pay more attention. We're also in a C2 a solar storm right now. We're entering into a solar ejection field, which means that we could see in some of the listener areas some really nice aurora tonight.
Really? How far south?
Minnesota.
Darn! I was gonna go tell Ferg because that's one of his ambitions is to see the aurora.
Possibly into Iowa and Illinois tonight.
Bob, can I ask Snork a quick question?
Ask anything you want, but by the way, before you do, let me note that Barbie is up in northeast Iowa, and she's been dealing with the flooding issues, so yeah, she knows of which you speak, Snork. Go ahead, Steve.
Snork, these solar spots that you're speaking of, could that cause a communication blackout of any kind?
Yes, that was the source of the Carrington event 100 years ago. A C3 or a C4.
Any idea of to what extent, or is it all speculation at this point?
This is a C2. It's considered moderate.
Okay. Well, thank you. Go ahead, Bob. Thanks for letting me interject.
Oh, no. Keep going. No, I'm not filibobstering here.
There are the National Weather Service, well, NOAA, provides space weather, where they're monitoring now the electron emission from the sun that bounces off of our atmosphere. Whenever you basically deflect an electron, you generate X-rays, so there's all kinds of radiation and issues that they have to warn satellites from when these extra electron bursts from the sun come out. And the solar masses can be electron, they can be proton, they have different things that hit us. And just recently, they put a satellite in an orbit that hits what's called a libration point. It's where the tug from the Earth and the tug from the sun are the same. It's a little point where if a satellite falls into it, it just stays there like it's being centered. And so that it constantly stays at the same point between the Earth and the sun. And is now monitoring weather for us. And we should have a series of them soon that'll be telling us the positions, or view of the sun from different positions around. But we still have nothing in the orbit going north over the sun, which is a big hole for us that we need to fill badly. And we still don't have a president that understands that we need to know what's going on in our solar system. Did I lose everybody?
No. We're all here. Marty. we just kind of.
Didn't the president just sign an executive order or something the other day about study of sun storms and whatnot?
I'm not sure. I know that Obama's talking about going to Mars, but I don't see the commitment necessary in order for us to get there.
Well, the Republican Party wishes he'd quit fooling around and get going.
Yeah. Well, in the 60s. The space budget was almost as big as our military budget because they understood that that's where the important knowledge was for our military, was how do we get satellites up and how do we go. But we're not doing hardly anything to study Oort clouds or any of the issues that are dark areas of our knowledge that we need to fill. And the importance of space just is not properly recognized. If they can't think of a way to spend an immediate large amount of money on a weapons system for something in space, it just doesn't get done.
You know what we need to do? I noticed that the, what was it, the Opportunity rover or whatever its name is, has lived well past its expected, its sell-by date up on Mars, so they're sending it to check out a crater to, or a gully or something to find out if water formed it. And as such, I think NASA needs to tell a little white lie. I think the NASA administrator needs to hold a news conference declaring that the Opportunity rover has discovered the presence of oil, coal, and natural gas on Mars. We'll be there yesterday.
That wouldn't be unreasonable.
All the Republicans would suddenly want to go, and then we might have a fucking livable planet.
Well, they just need to know what kind of minerals and stuff are out on those asteroids and shit, and what kind of valuable minerals that they can find up in outer space, and they'd be fucking willing to go up there. And
this is a lovely moment to remind everybody of what an awesome freaking show the Sci-Fi Channel's The Expanse is. It's,
I'll have to check that one.
Oh, it's worth it. It's so good. And season one is over, and season two is somewhere in the offing.
Phobos, one of the moons of Mars, is breaking up and is going to fall into Mars. But Mars is going to lose it anyway. It might be a captured asteroid. That's the case. It really should be the first asteroid that we find. It would be the easiest and least expensive one to find, and that could pay for the entire rest of the any type of space exploration. I'm getting a large amount of sounds in the background.
Yeah, me too, and I don't know where they're coming from.
Coming from Jules.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Hey, at just in case anybody's wondering, at 10 minutes before the hour, yeah, we've still got $315 to raise to stay out of a whopper of a damn hole come Morian Monday. So,
I'm still just having some PayPal issues. I hope they're gone by tomorrow.
I noticed, and you know, I never get any FU notes or anything, but there's something inside the PayPal system that's kind of squirrely relative to subscriptions.
It keeps attempting to pay from a closed account.
Which is strange. Yeah, well, I mean, I saw that happen.
Well, anyway, this recent ability for us to predict these space storms was quite an improvement. Lets us know when to put our satellites into a safer position so they don't get surprised and burnt out. We have a lot of burnt satellites sitting out in orbit that really is another system. We need to go out and start picking up our garbage out there before we have some serious problems. And not having them get killed by solar storms is pretty important. So that's going on. Once we start mining, if we find that there's minerals on Phobos that we could actually use, it might help us prevent some wars over materials like neodymium that we need so bad. But when it falls to Earth, it tends to go down to the core as quickly as possible. As it's the planet we live on is like a parfait of the ice cream with the different layers, different densities of a fluid, or your favorite drink at whatever bar. They tend to stratify into layers. Well, these rare earth metals tend to sink away from the surface as quickly as they can. And basically, our only way to get them is to go out to space to get them, or to make them in nuclear reactors. And a lot of people wouldn't like that. And most of what you make in a nuclear reactor isn't usable anyway. You can make silver in a nuclear reactor, but it tends to be an isotope that's not friendly to humans. In fact, a lot of the radioactive material coming from Fukushima is silver. But it's a silver that decays to something else nasty afterwards, too.
Yeah, Snork and I talked about this he was on my show here a couple of weeks back when the satellite or the little satellite thing that landed on the asteroid here not too long ago that they had out for 12 years and they were detecting a lot of different types of chemicals on the asteroid. Do you remember what the name of that was, Snork?
Oh, I forgot the name of that. I completely forgot.
Yeah, they had a satellite thing that went out way, way out. They had been following this asteroid for like 12,000 years, and they've been collecting data on it this whole time. And they have like 6 or 7 years worth of data that they have to process now. But it was successful, but it was kind of a bittersweet ending because they lost the satellite, but they retrieved all of this information from it, and that was one of the things they were talking about was the collection of minerals. But we were also talking about the asteroid fields and how the objects that are approaching Earth and how close some of these objects are coming to Earth and how therefore objects are approaching Earth.
Yeah, we just...
Okay, now that's a really interesting sound effect. What the fuck is that?
Somebody brushing their teeth with electric toothbrush.
That was not me.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to see if anybody noticed. It's my little... Sawzit handheld little mini hacksaw.
Jesus, Sparky.
That was
not
me.
I didn't know what the hell that was. I forgot to mute. I'm chopping up pieces of that oak branch. I don't know if anybody noticed, but I turned the camera on and pointed it.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I saw that, yeah.
So I'm trying to cut it up as I listen, but I forget to mute. Sorry.
Duncan's always busting my balls about the mute button, too, and here he goes, man.
Well, we just lost another satellite that we plunged into the Hovian atmosphere. It lived its life, and just to make sure that it wasn't a problem, we made it plunge. One of the things that we're really at a problem with right now is we changed the way we make nuclear fuel for bombs and for commercial usage, and we don't have as much plutonium. I think it's 240, might be 238, but that's out of my area of expertise. But it's the type of plutonium that we use to power Dick Cheney's heart. So we're at an extreme loss for it. And a lot of our lunar experiments used this isotope of plutonium, and they're still running. It's a fantastic long-term power, and we wasted so much of it on Dick Cheney's heart we probably had to postpone 3 or 4 missions just to keep Cheney alive.
Now quit it.
I'm not making that one up.
No, a snark doesn't. No, Mitch, he doesn't joke, honey. He doesn't joke.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
Is Jim in Louisiana still among the upright and above ground?
I presume he is. No, he's not connected anymore.
Oh, shoot. I had a question for him.
I bet he's still listening, though.
Well, the other night, Len O'Sanic, the guy who hosts Black Op Radio every Thursday night, for years, like 10 years, has been doing political conspiracy programming, mostly about the JFK assassination. And he sent me 2 little snippets of video from early 1968 when Jim Garrison did, I think, almost the entire Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, the topic being the JFK assassination.
Right, yeah.
And Garrison's investigation down in New Orleans. And I had heard that virtually all of the Tonight Show content during Carson's time from 62 until they moved to California, which was 72, that NBC routinely erased the tapes so that they could reuse them. And once Carson got wind of this, he was mad as hell and re-jiggered his contract so that his production company would own the show and have custody of the tapes. The subsequent Tonight Show tapes are all in a salt mine in Kansas somewhere. But anyway, so I was kind of surprised to see the video, the little segments of Garrison and Carson going at it from that era, because virtually everything pre-72 is long gone. And I was going to ask Jim in Louisiana if he knew of anyone who had a fuller complement of video of that interview, or film even. I've heard the entire interview, the audio section, but I didn't even realize that there was still any video left.
Well, if he's still listening, maybe he'll answer.
Okay. The other thing, earlier you were talking about Pence on with Charlie Rose on CBS this morning, and here's my thing about Pence. Did you notice in that interview, and then also with Trump in the debate on Sunday night, Anderson Cooper asked him point blank, he couldn't have been more straightforward, he asked Trump whether he had engaged in the behavior that he talked about on the Billy Bush Access Hollywood bus. And neither Trump with Charlie Rose today came out with a direct yes or no. And Trump, if you noticed how he phrased his response to Anderson Cooper's question, he prefaced it with the phrase, "Well, I can tell you this," and then he made his denial. Well, the preface, "I can tell you this," you could follow that with just about anything, and it wouldn't have any credence at all in the sense of an accurate, truthful answer. It's a trick that children use on their parents sometimes. Rather than give a direct response to a direct question, they preface it and word it in such a way. It's like weaselly words. It's tricks of language.
Yeah, kind of like when Homer Simpson said, "I'm not licking toads."
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the thing about it is, neither of these guys can answer anything truthfully or straightforwardly, and maybe that's the whole point. They wouldn't and couldn't, because if they did, they'd be in deeper doo-doo than they already are. But anyway, getting over to Limbaugh, the last radio station in Kansas City where I worked, he had worked there locally. This was long before his
national... Oh, Limbaugh, yeah, he sold hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals. Actually, he was in the front office in the PR department, I think.
Yeah, well, the one time I met him, he was working in that capacity. He had left KMBZ a couple of years before I got there in 88. I was there from 88 to early 90. And to a person, everybody on the staff said he was the same insufferable prick that he later came to be on a national radio stage. But he did his 13 or 26 weeks, made no discernible impact locally, and then went on to, I think, his PR job at the Royals was next.
And the same opinion was had of him when he was in Pittsburgh. And, of course, there's that old rumor that he was busted for gay pandering in the Hill District in Pittsburgh.
Oh, God.
And when he left Kansas City, he went to Sacramento.
Yeah, and do you know the story behind that? How he got his national show out of that Sacramento radio gig?
Maybe not.
Well, he went to Sacramento to replace Morton Downey Jr., who got a big national syndicated TV gig out of New Jersey.
Ah.
So the radio station in Sacramento needed a bombastic presence on their air to replace Morton Downey Jr., which caused Limbaugh to get his shot at fame doing talk radio in Sacramento. And then some honchos at ABC said, "Well, this guy is making quite an impact in Sacramento. Let's put him on nationally." So we have old Morton Downey Jr. to thank for El Rushbo.
Well, thanks for nothing. By the way, Carol Baker informs me that KMBZ is still filled with right-wing assholes. She says, "I'm banned from calling in. Go figure."
Well,
Carol Baker, ray of fucking sunshine to a right-winger, banned from calling in. What the fuck ever happened to free speech in this country?
Well, it was still a halfway decent station from 88 to 90 when I was there. We were still playing music mostly, but we had Kansas City baseball and other sports. But we also had a fair complement of talk. And I was, now, you got to remember, at the time the station was owned by Bonneville Corporation, which is to say it was owned by the Mormons, okay?
Yep.
And I was on Sunday mornings mostly, though I would fill in when guys were sick or on vacation during the week. And I used to have a woman on, her name was Pat Johnson, she was a psychic, and here I am on a Mormon-owned station on Sunday morning, the Lord's Day, taking calls from listeners, questions for Pat Johnson, the psychic. And finally, they had their fill of that and showed me where the door was and how to use it. But it was still a halfway decent radio station back then. But she's right. Yeah, they've gone completely off the twig in the years since. Psychic Sunday, and I remember one Sunday, Pat called on the hotline to tell me she wouldn't be in, because the night before she had left the door ajar of her automobile in it, and the battery ran down. So I had to make the somber announcement due to unforeseen circumstances. Our resident psychic, Pat Johnson, will not be able to be with us this morning. Unforeseen. Okay. Anyway, that's how that was.
That radio station in Sacramento was KFBK. I used to listen to it when I was driving back and forth to Sacramento in the 80s, late 80s, around 87, 88, to work.
Yeah, I think he was also a little bit more radical, Limbaugh was, when he was on just local radio. Didn't he do what he referred to as caller abortions? You would hear the sound, if he got a caller he didn't like, you'd hear the sound of a vacuum cleaner, and he would do what he calls a caller abortion to get rid of that particular caller. Just class all the way. That son of a
bitch. Well, I know that, I forget what the website is, but you can, if you go to your favorite search engine and type in Limbaugh Air Check Pittsburgh, you can hear that as far back as Pittsburgh, he was doing the same tired shtick that he does, you know, with one hand tied, with one hand, with half my brain tied behind my back, or with talent on loan from God. And he probably stole that from somebody in Pittsburgh.
Well, and see, back then, I think it was at KQV, I think was what the Pittsburgh station was. And it was essentially top 40, I think, at the time.
Yeah, he was a music disc jockey, but he was still a right wing asshole, and it crept in from time to time.
That was one of the issues that management had with him at KMBZ. He was constantly breaking format, and that they would issue a memo, and it was a union shop, so management had to be very careful in the manner that they would tread in terms of talent. But after all, it was their candy store, you know. But he was there like 13 weeks or 26 weeks, and he just did not make any impact at all.
Either Punky's voice has changed, or there's an animal participating in the program.
Punky's doing
one of Jules' dogs.
Oh, okay.
Punky's taking one of those record language deals where it's 15 albums in a little booklet, and you learn a dialect or a different language. He's taken up dog. He wants to be a Doberman secretly in his little heart of birdie hearts.
Well, it's not Cletus, I assure you.
Well, hey, I see quite often Jenny gets to the party later in the program, but she's actually early. Jenny, good evening.
Oh, I'm here. I was just
Jenny.
Check in, but Bob.
Yes.
I actually made it to the post office today. Monday, new Glarus glasses should be in your hands.
Oh, hot damn. I will tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout and tell him that it's glass.
Yeah, no, and I like added it with their bubble wrap and Piggly Wiggly bags, which I know you have here, but we call them the Wobbly Hog.
Ah, the Wiggling Pig. Yes. I didn't know the pig wiggled all the way to Wisconsin.
Oh yes, the pig wiggles all the way to Wisconsin, and we call them the Wobbly Hog. So there's a few extra things, and let me know if they make it in. There's two glasses in a big box, and yes. And I asked the people, as the postmaster or the postperson, like, I wanted to send beer, and they're like, no. I'm like, okay, I'm just sending glasses.
So. And I don't know if you can do it through the postal service. I know you can. You know, you can ship through UPS or stuff, but because it's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the sentiment.
You cannot ship booze to the USPS. They won't let you. You can do it through the UPS, but it's very expensive, and you got to have somebody 21 or older on the receiving end to sign for it at the time of the delivery. Otherwise, it'll go back.
So, oh, and I have another question.
They will if you don't tell them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You could say it was, you know, a perfume or something, I guess, and hope for the best.
So, Bob, I have another question, which is kind of like off topic, but whatever.
There's no such thing on Friday.
So I'm driving my friend who's like 80 to Florida to her summer or winter home. She probably has more spirit than me. Anyway, we're going to Cleveland, and I'm like, all I want to do is see the new River Gorge. I want to see the new River Gorge. It's the second oldest river in the world. I just need to see this. If I leave here on the 23rd, I'm like the end of October, can I still go to the New River Gorge? Is there like ice?
No. This is West Virginia, not Wisconsin, Jenny. End of November should probably be reasonably nice.
No, October.
End of October. Like, well, oh, hell yeah. End of October. Yes. Yeah. You know, we don't even have a good fall color yet. So there's every possibility in the world that the colors would be wild. I just don't know. I mean, you're coming from Milwaukee, right?
Yes. You know what? I have the most beautiful maple tree in front of my house. This morning, I woke up. The maple tree is on the west side of my apartment. The sun is coming from the east, obviously. I pulled up my blinds. This morning, I woke up. I live with the most beautiful tree in Milwaukee. Anyway, carry on. So, like, if I come there in, like, 2 weeks, it's not going to be fog and...
No. Ice? Well, I mean, it might, but there's never a time of year when the gorge isn't beautiful in one way or another. I'm just trying to figure out how leaving Wisconsin and heading to Florida, you're going to make a viable trip to the gorge because it's. Well, I mean,
we have a friend in in Cleveland.
Okay, that's 6 hours from where I am.
Right. So I'm thinking Cleveland south to Charlotte, leaves Cleveland south. Visit the gorge. Like, I just need
what you would want to do is you'd want to come out of Cleveland and get on 77 South.
Yep.
And 6 hours will put you in the New River Gorge. You can either go all the way to Beckley and turn back north or that's what you're going to do. You're going to follow 77 onto the West Virginia Turnpike all the way to Beckley. And you'll turn back north on US 19.
And then go see the gorge.
Right.
Is there a place to park there? Or
oh, yeah, there's a whole visitor's center. I mean, there's all kinds. There's overlooks that you can climb down to where you're like halfway between the bridge and the floor of the gorge. You're looking up at the bridge. There's an overlook that overlooks the bridge. There's a state park where you can use those binoculars that you put a quarter in and look back at the, and you can actually go down. You can go down to the bottom of the canyon for that matter.
No, I'm not going to do that, but.
I mean, you don't have to ride a donkey to do that or anything. I mean, there's paved roads, Jenny.
I know. No, but I mean, I'm with like an 80-year-old woman who has like,
oh, wait.
You know, issues.
Yeah, wait a minute. Stop telling people how to get to the New River Gorge, Bob.
No, but like, I looked up the New River Gorge, and I'm like, talk like about you, and it's like the second oldest river. This river has been flowing before Pangea. This river has been flowing before the continents.
Absolutely, absolutely. For people who want to look up the history, it's referred to by the geologist as the Great Tays River, T-E-A-Y-S. And it flowed east to west across this part of Pangaea.
Seriously, like, I just need to, I don't know. So, it's not the most direct flight, you know, area to drive to Florida.
No, but it's not a terribly out of the way kind of approach, because you just get back on 19, go down, get back on the turnpike, follow 77 down to Withville, and then you can either stay on 77 or you can pick up 81 would be kind of counterproductive. I'd stay on 77 and eventually work my way over to I-95.
I don't know.
But there's every chance in the world. The gorge will probably be beautiful when you get here.
Oh, I can't wait. Seriously.
And of course, I will be deeply hurt if you don't contact me.
I will tell you when I'm going to be there. How far are you from the gorge?
Oh, I can get there. I can be there in less than a half hour if you tell me.
All right. I will let you know.
Yeah, when you get to Beckley, email me, or when you get to Charleston, email me.
All right, perfect.
I'll meet you there.
Oh, I'm so excited. Because, I don't know, that just seems like one of the most, well, seriously, it's the second oldest river in the world. And it's like, whatever, I don't know. I'm a painter and I paint places. And I don't paint buildings, I paint things, and I don't know. It just seems so like a wonder.
Well, it is. It is. And if you want, I will I'll jump in the car and I'll drive you back and forth across the bridge so you can take photographs.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah,
With your brush and your palette, I'm sure it will turn into something magnificent, Jenny.
It'll be beautiful. Oh, thank you. Oh, yay!
Because, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here looking at the sandhills right now.
Oh, that's...
And that one photo from Facebook of you with the sandhills painting on the easel, looking at the sandhills, where the painting itself merges into the photograph, that's just marvelous.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bob, that 19 that you speak of, and I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead, Steve.
I just got a quick question. The 19 that you speak of, is that the same 19 that runs all the way through Russell County, Virginia, all the way in here to the Georgia Mountains?
Damn skippy.
So how far does that thing go, man?
That's a U.S. highway. It goes from the Great Lakes to Florida, I think.
Wow. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Just like US 60 crosses the continent.
That'd be kind of like the old Dixie Highway through Route 25 through northern Kentucky that years ago people used to use to get down to Florida.
Right. Before they had the interstates, that was their only choice, you know. It was their only option.
That was good hard road. See, we still have that fluid definition of good road here in West Virginia.
Right. And it's probably the equivalency to Route 40 that runs all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I-65 that runs from, Indianapolis to Mobile? Something like
that? I forget the name of the highway. I think it's the Jefferson Highway or the Lincoln Highway or something. That was one of the precursors to the interstate roads. And we've got a marker here on the California end of whatever the highway was called, right here in San Diego. And it's like an official marker that's been there for decades. Whatever the highway is, this marker signifies the end of the such and such highway. I'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
And Bob or Scott, I got a question. Either one of you guys could probably answer this, and this has been eating at me. And it's really not relevant, but I'm going to throw it out there. Terrestrial radio, West of the Rockies, they all begin with a K. East of the Rockies, they begin with a W. Is there any rhyme or reason behind that?
Yeah, I know that one.
Although the first radio station was, of course, KDKA in Pittsburgh.
So that defies the rule, then.
The people up in Boston would dispute that. They think the WBZ was the first commercial radio station.
I thought it was WABC out of New York was the first commercial radio station. Am I wrong in that? No? Okay.
No. No, the answer to your question is the W stands for wireless and the K stands for cordless. And that's how that... See, up in Canada, it's a part of an international treaty. Canada's radio and TV, the stations begin with the letter C. In Mexico, they begin with the letter X. And some of them down in Mexico have five letters instead of four, or some of them used to. I don't know about now.
A lot of them west of the Mississippi are grandfathered, too. The W came first, and Des Moines has WHO. There was some others out here that were slight variants, but they let the old ones keep their W call letters until they were sold. I think only just a few left have not been sold.
Yeah, there's only, as far as the three-letter radio stations, like WLS in Chicago, and let's see, WHB was a longtime Kansas City station. There are very few of the three-letter stations around. I know KSL in Salt Lake City is still around.
The first commercial radio station was KDKA in Pittsburgh, which went on the air in the evening of November 2nd, 1920, with a broadcast of the returns of the Harding-Cox presidential election. The success of the KDKA broadcast and of the, he said, pushing the link.
Now, Harding-Cox, is there any connection to the Cox Communications?
Yes.
That he also owned the AGC, owned the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and many newspapers.
Well, Cox, as I understand it, was, I think, James Cox, who was at one time the governor of Ohio. Is that, could that be right? Years ago?
Possibly. I worked for them, so I should know all this, but I don't.
Well, I worked for Cox Cable when I first moved out here for 2 years that I wish I had back. I didn't find out until after I got there that they were vehemently anti-union, okay? And they were not keen on the notion of not only organizing, but even thinking about talking about organizing.
Oh, yeah, so, even the murmur of it, man, could get you in hot water.
And by the way, Dr. John notes, for what it's worth, back at the Missouri School of Journalism, we were taught that the first radio station was KDKA back in, I think, 1920. So, yeah. And just because everybody loves playing DJ. John just said, cue this up. And if I can only get, okay, we'll go to the other machine.
Well, thanks for answering that. That's been a burning question of mine for years now.
Well, I'm glad to be of service. Bob, I've got, while you're queuing your thing, I've got a quick compliment.
Yes?
For you, personally, as a broadcaster. The other night, I was looking on YouTube for something interesting to look at or listen to, and I happened upon a couple of programs done on WOR Radio in New York, of the late, great Gene Shepherd, who a lot of people don't remember from radio, but we could pick him up on the East Coast back in the 60s and into the 70s. Most people know him as the writer and the narrator of the program, the movie A Christmas Story, about the Red Ryder bolt-action BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was based on a short story that he wrote. And he narrates it and even appears in the film. But his ability to wordsmith or word weave, I pick up bits of that in what you do sometimes in your filibuster. You just have a way with words that, after hearing Shepard a little bit the other night, is reminiscent of what he was up to. And if you want a treat late one night, look up the YouTube clip Triangular Donuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a beauty. And, I mean, for people who appreciate, A, broadcasting, and, B, good storytelling, there is nobody like the late, great Gene Shepard. And in point of fact, that is a high compliment indeed, and I appreciate it. I'm nowhere near worthy of it. But, well, in fact, you've touched on something that Les up in Massachusetts has been listening for a long, long time. And on my one and only trip to the Commonwealth, as Charlie Pierce puts it, God save it, of Massachusetts, I got to meet Les, and Les provided me with a wallet of discs of Gene Shepard.
Oh, wow.
And if you want, I mean, you want to talk about the best use you have ever put the CD player in an automobile to on a long trip, that. Just pop one of those in and go. I could cross the country and never turn on the for-profit radio easily.
He was doing this in the 50s and the 60s and even into the 70s on a clear channel, that is to say a 50,000-watt radio station in the dead of night out of New York, WOR, and he had legions of fans, mostly kids who had a little radio under the covers with them when they were supposed to be asleep. Who is that guy that's on LA radio? He's the guy that used to throw the football and try to knock the meatball off of the top of the David Letterman Christmas tree on the show each year. I can see him, but I can't think of his name. He's a humorist and comedian. Oh, Jesus. Well, it'll come to me later. But anyway, when I think of his name, I'll call it out, but he did a tribute to Gene Shepard after Shep died in like 98 or 99, I guess it was. And it ran on LA radio, whatever station he's affiliated with. And it was just wonderful. Clips and remembrances. I'll see if I find that. Go ahead and play your deal there.
Yeah, well, Dr. John was playing disc jockey, and yes, X is the designation for Mexican radio, which immediately calls this to mind. I'm waiting for my favorite line.
I'm on a Mexican whoa, radio.
Yeah.
eating barbecued iguana.
I take requests on the telephone.
Because that's my favorite line. I wish I was in Tijuana eating barbecued iguana.
I've got a correction to make. I was having a senior moment. I conflated two L.A. radio people. The person who did the Gene Shepherd tribute on the radio was Harry Shearer. And the guy who I thought it was, whose name I couldn't remember, other name I couldn't remember, was Jay Thomas. Okay, nice. So...
Yeah, other Asa wrote in a minute ago and said Jay Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was having a senior moment confusing those two people, who are both quite good at what they do, by the way. But if you look online, you can probably find the Harry Shearer tribute to Gene Shepherd, which I think I've got on my iTunes player. Hell of a broadcaster. Wish he was still around. He'd be having a... Excelsiors would be spread all around, and Trump would be the ultimate fathead.
Hey, Bob, quick deviation from the Trump machine.
Deviant.
I'm going to throw a trivia question out there. What was the first song played on MTV? Let's see if anybody knows this.
It's easy.
Go ahead.
Video Killed the Radio Star.
By? The Bugles. Close, yeah. Buggles, Bugles, B-U-G-G-L-E-S.
The Buggles, the Buggles.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good job, Bob. I'm impressed, man.
And you met, with the mention of Gene Shepherd, it reminds me of something I heard Michael the Savage Wiener say the other day, and I was reminded of this when Hoghead in the chat room said, yeah, in Kansas City in the afternoon, you've got a choice between Sean Hannity and Savage. I heard, the Savage pisses and moans a lot, the Savage Wiener does. And he said, political radio will be dead in America after this election. Hillary Clinton will eviscerate the First Amendment, and people like me will probably be off to a camp. Yeah, there's some idiotic drivel like that. But then he said, and the only people who will survive in radio are the people who can tell a story. Which was his way of saying, no, he'll still be here because because he goes on the air and tells stories about taking his dog to the Italian restaurant in San Francisco. How that man can stand to live in San Francisco, I got no clue. But then again, he could live in a toxic conservative hellhole. But no, he kind of likes living in the liberal, San Francisco Bay Area, right? Yeah. So,
just because I feel, just saying,
we're still stuck at $315, folks. We do not need to go into Moran Monday at $515 of fundraising to go. Thanks to everybody who's helped out during the week. It was huge. We would be in a much deeper hole, especially given Wednesday, my absence Wednesday, but for your help. But this evening, we got it. If it's at all humanly possible, $5 at a time, $10 at a time. It makes my liver quiver just to think about a $515 fundraising hole. So, forgive me. I'm sorry, I don't like doing this, but with us coming up on another anniversary of independent, non-commercial broadcasting, well, this is the only way it happens. And again, I'm sorry to even mention it. It makes me feel icky. I don't like doing it, but we're there. And, just battling our way out of a fundraising hole at the beginning of the damn week. No, please. So, over there at headonradionetwork.com, the contribute tab, subscribers, mighty welcome if you're not already. We're still trying to fight our way to the happy 100, let alone the fearless 400. But any combination, any way you want to do it,
you know, 100 at $3.15, whatever. But kind of, you know, because when, you know, when we cross lines like that, it feels really, really dire, and I don't know what's going to get cut off first. So, you know, that's where we are, and that's what it is. So having said that again, I apologize some more. But let's get back to having fun.
Here's another senior moment I just realized I had. We were talking about Mexican radio. How can I forget one of the greatest voices on Mexican radio, border outlaw radio, the great Wolfman Jack?
Oh.
Have mercy, baby!
Selling his baby chicks and his glow-in-the-dark Jesus statues and God knows what else.
I don't remember, but I listened to him all the time when I worked graveyard shift at a gas station on I-5 in 1970. The only time we could pick him up, it was at night.
Yeah, I remember his
torch of a tower.
His cameo in American Graffiti, that was a classic.
And you know, and for kids like me, we found we found out about him, you know, by virtue of the Midnight Special.
Oh, I just had a man cave moment here. Couldn't figure out why all the cows are running down the pasture. He's putting out feed for them.
Ah, okay. Well, good news. Right. We've crossed the $300 barrier. We're now down to $290 to go, which makes the division and the gazentas easier. But thank you, Charlene. Thank you very, very kindly for doing that. $290 to go.
I just emailed you both of the links to the two-hour special that Harry Shearer did, the tribute to Gene Shepherd, Bob. So enjoy that.
I absolutely will over the weekend. All right, so Dr. John is, he said, this is a serious question. Yeah, okay, but what was the second song played on MTV? Seriously asking, he says. Do you know the answer?
I could cheat and Google it, but I'm not going to. That'd be cheating. I don't know.
I've got a couple of guesses. One of them would be the Human League, Don't You Want Me? And there's another one that's just kind of tickling my brain, and I can't quite touch it.
Oh, wow. I just Googled it.
All right. So I haven't Googled. Agnes Viking Warrior Princess just moved my headphone aside and whispered into my ear, tell me if I'm right, Billy Idol Rebel Yell.
No. They list the first four here. Let me see if there are more of them, see if he's among them. No, I don't see him. And not yet, anyway. I'm still scrolling.
I know that Mexican radio song.
Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science, maybe?
Yeah.
No?
How about if I give you a hint? First name of the artist is Pat.
Benatar.
Yeah.
Hit me with your best shot.
No. Here, I'll tell you the song. I don't remember it, but then again, I was not a real big, fan of that music. Pat Benatar was the second video aired on MTV. You Better Run.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Whoever gives credence to seconds, but I guess we should. And I'm looking at Hogg mentioning Pink Floyd in the chat room, and he may be interested to know that they are going to do it, not Pink Floyd. I think Roger Waters has announced he's going to do a tour next month called Us and Them. So That should be interesting.
I know one place that tour won't go.
I have no idea. It's coming to Atlanta.
Yeah, it ain't going to Israel.
I won't be able to afford it, but, you know, maybe I can catch up on the hype. I would say tickets are probably $150 a piece for that thing.
That would almost, well, I mean, I couldn't in a million years, but that would almost feel like money well spent.
Yeah.
Of course, I saw the later incarnation of the momentary lapse of reason incarnation of Pink Floyd at the Omni in Atlanta. I was living there at the time.
Yeah, was it a good show, Bob?
Oh, it was awesome. They flew the pig around the room. they had all the inflatables from the wall.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, your tenure down here, I've asked you this once before, and you may have answered me, and I apologize if I've forgotten. Did you work for CNN or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Malloy and I were there at the same time, but I mean, there were a lot of people there. I was in the radio division. He was over in the on the TV side.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. I knew you had some rich background, but I didn't know to what extent.
Oh, I mean, the record didn't stand for long, but at one point in time, I was the youngest person ever to broadcast an international newscast.
No kidding.
Yeah, I never rose to the level of winning the Proud Pig. It's the Silver Sow, Johnny. Right, you are, Les. Yeah. I never won one of those or anything, but I did get some naked pictures internationally. You know, fan mail.
Did you meet Wolf Blitzer?
No, Wolf was in Washington. and at the time I was there, he was just Pup Blitzer.
Cub Blitzer.
But I met Ted back in his drinking days.
Yeah, well, you were probably under Ted's payroll back then.
I got Ted's autograph every 2 weeks, whether I needed it or not.
Wow. That's very intriguing.
There was a place in the Omni. You know, he'd bought the Omni, and he completely remodeled it to be the broadcast home of CNN, of the entire CNN operation. And it was an exciting place to work. I mean, you felt like you were on the front end of something that was really going to change stuff. And you know, there was, you know, food court was down there. You know, you could go down there and get, there was an ice cream, an Atlanta area ice cream parlor, can't remember what the name of it was. There was a sandwich shop that was just killer.
Brickstone. The Varsity, of course.
No, the Varsity wasn't in there.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would have camped out there. I'd stop on North.
Not in there, but the Varsity's been downtown Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, I stopped over on North Avenue for three chili dogs all the way, walking a jumbo FO and a big rings. Lots.
That's probably why I got to take high blood pressure medicine.
But, I mean, when I started there, they were still over on Techwood Drive in that big old mansion that had been a golf course clubhouse, country club clubhouse. And then we moved to the fabulous CNN Center, which had been formerly known as the Omni, and it had one point in time housed the largest indoor amusement park in the country, the World of Sid and Marty Krofft, in which you could ride in a roller coaster whose cars were shaped like pinballs.
That's down off Marietta Street, isn't it?
I don't even remember anymore. I just remember how I got there.
Well, it's all changed so much now. You probably
a year ago. I drove through Atlanta, and it was the most terrifying experience I've had. I think I've ever had in my life. traffic was crazy when I was there in the late '80s. It's fucking psychotic now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you've got 8 lanes on either side of the downtown connector, and everybody there is having their goddamned Earnhardt moment. If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
What engineer thought merging 75 and 85 together, two major arteries? Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, you know, the late, great Louis Brizard, who was kind of right-wingish, but can be forgiven for it because he was brilliant.
Right. He was so funny, yeah.
Late, great Louis Brizard said that it's not that they're always working on the connector. It's that they lost the plans and nobody has the courage to admit it. But, you know, it used to be kind of fun to toddle around on the interior streets of Atlanta. Now it's goddamn road warrior. I mean, Jesus. Running up and down Ponce and the 516 variations of Peachtree. And by the way, it's not Ponce de Leon. It's Ponce de Leon, goddammit.
Ponce de Leon.
Ponce de Leon.
The Gold Club off of Spring Street. Of course, we've never been there.
No, I've never been there. Never. No, never. Never purchased champagne in the Gold Club or the Cheetah Lounge. Never done
the
that.
The good times. Miss Karen's, listen.
Tell me, there was a chain there in the late 80s called Houston's. It was a restaurant chain. But it was a really good chain. And I spent a lot of time running up and down West Paces Ferry up in that neck of the woods.
You were on the east side then of the perimeter.
No, correct? I was south of the perimeter.
Right.
But you'd get off 41 and turn right on West Paces Ferry, and there was a Houston's there that we ate at a lot. And there was the OK Cafe, which I heard burned down, but might have been rebuilt.
There was a Rays on the River that my dad used to die for.
Oh, one of my favorite cocaine dealers worked as a bartender at Rays on the River.
I don't know if Dad was dipping in the snow or not, but he...
It was the 80s, okay? I mean, this is all forgivable. It was the 80s.
He said they made an awesome steak. I don't know about this.
Oh, they did. They did. They absolutely did. And you know how you eat a big steak and everything, and you're kind of sluggish and everything afterward.
Yep.
You could perk right up. it sat right there on the Chattahoochee. We used to go down and hike around in Chattahoochee. You could you'd see like old cannonballs emerging, eroding out of the sandy banks of the river. It was a neat time. But I lived in an apartment complex just across the Hooch, on US 41, right where you turn off to go to Vinings.
I'm very familiar with that area.
If you got to the Big Chicken, you'd gone too far.
That's in Marietta. How did you wind up back in West Virginia when you were a big time city slicker working for CNN?
It's a long story, but worth
it's
the telling.
It's okay. You don't have
No.
Okay.
I'm happy to, but there's some good
news.
We'll
save it for another night.
No, there's some good news too. We are down to $240 to go. So, thank you very kindly to Christopher up in the Northwest Territories. Thank you very, very kindly. For doing that. So, that's doable. Like, one at 240, two at 120, four at 60, eight at 30, 16 at 15, 32 at 750, et cetera. 240, maybe we can reach that in the next 12 minutes. I was working on a master's degree in theater, in acting at the University of Alabama. I'd originally gone there for journalism. And then I decided, hell, I'm going to do the acting thing. You got to do this or you're going to wind up gumming your cream corn when you're 90 going, I could have been an actor. And it didn't take long for me to figure out I was not going to be an actor. I still love it. But I could never figure out what to do with my hands, which is why I wound up a radio guy. So I left there and I went to Atlanta, and I had been program director at an AM talk in Northwest Alabama, and overnight DJ, chief cook, bottle washer, all that kind of stuff. And walked into the young CNN, and years before, this is what makes the story fun. Years before, when our eighth grade yearbook came out in junior high school, one of my friends had said, in a very few years, I will turn on the TV and I will hear your voice doing TBS News Watch. because I was from the moment we got what was back then WTCG, I was a Ted Turner fan, and I remain one to this day. One of the best rich liberals there is. And
agreed.
And so that, I mean that, that's I've got that somewhere. And I walked into, you know, it's like it didn't cost me anything. And I was staying, I was staying with a friend of mine. She's a very well respected professor now, but she was teaching in Atlanta. And I was sleeping on her couch. And I walked in and said, I want a job. And they said, fill out the application. And I did. And they took me back and they rolled tape, and it was really tape, you know, 15 inch reels, quarter inch, two channel, and handed me some news and said, read it. And I read it, and they said, well, that's the first part you passed. Can you type? And I said, not real good. And they said, no broadcast journalist can. Can you type enough that you can read what you type? And I said, yep. So they handed me a bunch of copy and said, turn these into 15-second snippets, and then go read your own newscast. We recorded it, and I was on the air that day.
Wow, what an awesome story, man. That's rich. That is really rich, Bob.
And it all felt completely normal at the time. But, you know, back home, you know, and sure enough, what they'd do is they'd come to the radio people for voice talent with their scripts for, this is a TBS Newswatch. And you'd go to the booth and you'd record the TBS Newswatch. Sometimes when the guy who still does a shit ton of the voicers, who isn't James Earl Jones, who does a ton of the voicers for CNN, you know, he'd be busy or something because he was also a manager. And so a couple of nights I got to do, welcome to Larry King Live. Tonight, Larry's guests. It, you know. That, you know.
So just, you know. I bet you.
Welcome
if we dug
to Crossfire.
Around hard,
tonight, in the Crossfire. Yeah.
If we dug around hard enough, we could find audio of Bob saying, welcome to Larry King News Hour. I'll bet you it's still out there somewhere.
I kind of doubt it.
Do you think, what did they destroy all that, or?
No, I think it's like what you guys were talking about earlier. They reused the tapes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I used to have a whole reel of it, but that got disappeared eons ago.
And it's carbon-based. It turns to dust. If you don't continually make copies every 20 years, you'll lose it, you know, like any tape.
Oh, and by the way, thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport. We are down to let's see, 215. Thank you to Jeff in PA. Jeff just took us down to 190.
Thank you, Jeff. Man, that's awesome, Bob. We got it.
Yes, thank you, everyone that is contributing or able to contribute.
I just freak out when I think about $500 fundraising holes. I do, but I mean that's the story. And then how I got here, I was right in the flight path of Dobbins Air Force Base, and I worked a split shift, 3 days a week. I worked 2 to 10, and then 2 days a week, I worked 11 to 7. P.M. 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And so it would be like Sunday, Monday morning or something. And I would have just crawled into bed. And some son of a bitch jet jockey would fly about 15 feet over my apartment complex coming out of Dobbins. And I'd go out on my balcony, and there was no time of day or night when I couldn't hear this. It was like white noise. It was just, and it was the interstate. And I'd been gone from West Virginia for about 3 years. And I began to get the fidgets.
Everybody I know that's ever lived in West Virginia, for some reason, it always has a way of sucking them back in.
I just wanted to come back here and not hear any fucking thing.
I understand that. I understand it. And I'm not casting aspersions. It's just been my observation.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, it's real. So I came back, and I used as my excuse having been admitted to law school. Did my 3 years of law school, got my little sheepskin, and the rest, as they say, is history. So,
and you've been hanging and banging and rocking and rolling ever since.
Yep, yep. I worked as a newscaster on the AM side of a radio station in Morgantown. In the morning hours, and I worked as the overnight jock on the FM rock and roll side at night. And there's nothing quite like being a rock and roll DJ on the overnights in a college town.
Oh, I bet you could write a book, Bob.
I probably could if I ever had time.
And didn't you do talk radio for some kind of coal union station many, many moons ago? Or
No. In 2000.
I'm having a brain fart.
Back in 2003, I started filling in for Dr. Bill when he needed to be away.
And maybe that's when I.
And by 2004, that, I mean, that's the whole story of Gina, It's All For You. I was filling in for Dr. Bill, and, you know, his style and mine are pretty different. And I was raising hell and screaming my fool head off and, you know, chewing up right-wing collars and spitting them out. And Gina, Wayne's wife, heard and called Wayne and said, "You've got to turn on the radio. You've never heard anything like this." And Wayne turned on the radio and he said, and this is probably a story I should be telling on the 24th, our anniversary.
Okay, we'll
No. And he went, yeah. And so Wayne went and got funding to get me on the air from like 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights. And that lasted for a year and a half until I started just blistering the bejesus out of the coal industry for mountaintop removal.
And what year was this?
This would be 2005.
That's probably did it stream?
And they bought me off the air.
Did it stream online? Can you remember?
Yeah, it streamed. It streamed.
That's probably where I first caught you then.
Yeah, there are a few people who have been listening to that, like you.
Yep.
David in South Carolina.
Yep.
A few others. And I used to, I don't know what happened to it, but I used to have a lot of tape of that.
But it's turned to dust, or you've misplaced it, or it's gone. Huh?
Yeah, it's laying around here somewhere. There are a few digital files of that, I think, maybe some CDs or whatever. But yeah, they bought me off the air, and at the same time that they were getting rid of me, Wayne's wife Gina had her gallbladder out, and the doctor butchered her. And she died before she could ever hear the horn go on the air. And Wayne funded the creation of this studio as a living memorial to Gina. And that's why every night we say, "Gina, it's all for you."
That's very moving. That is very moving. And thanks for sharing, Bob. Seriously.
Oh, yeah, in many ways, it feels charmed. It feels almost like it has a purpose. And, you know, we started out and the plan was to make an immediate leap to terrestrial radio, because I believed in me, Agnes believed in me, Wayne believed in me, we all believed in what we were doing here. Within the first 2 years of the horn being on the air, we were actually producing just 3 hours less per day of live progressive radio content than Air America was, and doing it on nothing.
Oh, absolutely, and kicking ass too.
Doing it on nothing.
Bob, it's that time, brother. I hate to shut you down.
It is. Who's ringing the damn bell?
I don't know. It's not me.
That's me. That's my cowbell.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. Right. Punky wants one of them bells for his cage.
But I'm guessing, being as how you want to go on sleeping, he ain't getting one, is he, Scott?
No, he's got a little wimpy one that he fights with. This one would fight back, that big old thing. I imagine it in my mind's eye.
Yep.
How big is that thing? Maybe 5 inches across the base?
Mine? No. It's a Swiss cowbell from 1878 model.
Ooh.
Yeah, and being Swiss doesn't mean it has holes in it. But hey, it's Malloy time. Is Malloy live tonight? Way or the other.
As far as I know, he is. I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
And I'm still fighting with Frontier, and it's driving me crazy trying to get the static IP fixed so I can get, you know, next time they need me. Because I feel terrible about what happened last week. But, yeah, we got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks, Snork, and thanks, Jenny and Jules. Thanks, Scott and Punky. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Jim, for joining in on the stress line. Thanks, everybody, who contributed to get us down to within striking distance of getting the fundraising goal knocked out. We're down to $190. Thank you very, very kindly. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, the hardest-working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. That's 25.